Thank you, Tony. Next, we're going to have Marley. Yes. Marley's going to come up and share her experience at Strengthen Hope.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. I'm Marvin. I'm an addict. And I, too, would like to thank the committee for allowing me this opportunity. I'm very humbled and thankful for the opportunity to be up here. Well, my dad took a lot of my anxiousness and nervousness away with some of the stuff he shared because, you know, when you're family, right, in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, sometimes it's hard to share stuff because you don't know when it'll get back to them. You know what I mean? And I know that he shared a lot of stuff because he told me the stuff he shared. He's a very honest and open person, which I thank him for that because I got that too for those who know me, right? And but it still don't make it easy sometimes when you got to share some things that and get it off your chest and you don't know who's like going to tell him because they super close with him and all that kind of stuff, right? And I'm coming in only with 5 years and he got like, what, 28? And so it's like not knowing who I can share what to. But anyway, my clean date is March 17, 2012. And I'm just going to share my story because that's the best thing I can do at the moment. So I hope it helps you guys out, and I think it will give you some emotional and spiritual crisis, you know, situations, I guess. So I was born in Woodbridge. Well, no, excuse me. I was born out of the country, right? Military family. He named it Japan. And when we got back to the States, my mom bought a house in Woodbridge, Virginia. And at this point, my mother and my father were divorced. But, of course, I still knew my dad, and I knew my mom, and she remarried, and he remarried. And so it was very interesting. By five, I had a new stepfather, and by six, I had a new stepmom. So, you know, I had two different families. And both of my parents were a part of my life. I was mostly around my mom and them, but my dad was very active in my life as well. And so it was very interesting. I have a biological, a half-sister on my mom's side, and she's 17 years older than me, and then I have my brother, you know, and he's 7 years older than me. The rest of my stepbrothers and sisters are much older than me, right? So I struggled at an early age with feeling a part of because the age gap was so big, you know what I'm saying? And I dealt with a lot of the jealousy of the stepbrothers and sisters because I grew up in the household with a stepfather who had like multiple children, and they were jealous because none of them grew up with their dad. So they didn't all really like me that much, you know what I'm saying? And so I struggled with that because I love family. The idea of family was a big thing to me, but I didn't understand why they didn't like me so much and why it was always so much drama. So I didn't always feel comfortable at home. And then, you know, when I went to visit my dad's side of the family, not his side, but my stepmom's side of the family, they came from Maryland. And that was a big thing for me because I took Maryland as hood, ghetto, ethnic, you call it what you want to call it. I'm from Woodbridge, Virginia. It was a little different for me. And so I felt some kind of way when I was around them because how they spoke wasn't how I was used to speaking. And our household was very serious into church because of my mom. And so when I heard different words be said or whatever, I was uncomfortable. So I wasn't comfortable at one house. I wasn't really comfortable at the other house. I was a very uncomfortable person. I spent a lot of time outside. I was very into sports growing up, so I got into track, and I was a soccer girl, and I was a tomboy growing up, believe it or not, with the heels and stuff, but I was a tomboy growing up. I dressed I dressed like a guy, you know what I mean? My mom even kind of wondered which way I was going with it, no offense to nobody, but that's what she wondered, right? Because that's how I rolled, and it just was what it was growing up, and for the long time, like, I wanted to hang out with the girls, but it was nothing but guys in our neighborhood. And finally, when I was old enough to go around the corner where the other girls lived at, and I was excited about it because I was finally old enough to go just around the corner, you know, I did that. But the other girls did things that I ain't never really do. You know, they smoke weed and stuff like that. And me, I wasn't about to smoke weed because I was in DARE, you know, don't do drugs. I don't know if y'all know what DARE is. And I was an athlete, so, you know, I couldn't do that stuff. But, you know, I was open to drink because that was socially acceptable, and I heard other athletes did it, so it wasn't a big deal. So, you know, I drank at the age of 15, and I enjoyed it, and I liked it because I was a part of these girls, and I hung out and stuff like that, and I felt a part of the group, and I turned into a blackout drunk. And if you don't know what a true blackout drunk is, you're still functioning, but you don't remember what the hell happened. And that was me at the age of 15. And I didn't know you weren't supposed to do that. It wasn't like I was asking my parents how you're supposed to drink. But that was me at the age of 15, a blackout drunk. And so that kept on happening. So my addiction started early. I mean, I'm sure I had others earlier on, but that's the one I can kind of focus on, right, is that. And so time went on and moving forward and stuff. And yes, I had a tough relationship with my dad growing up. You know, I still knew who he was. And we had a bit of really uncomfortable scenarios, you know what I mean, that kind of strained our relationship. And I pushed forward with that. You know what I mean? It was just kind of tough for me at that time. And so I found other things and places to go to, you know, make myself feel better, and I continued to drink. And graduation time came right from high school, and most people think about college and stuff like that. And in my household, everybody was military. You know, mom was military, dad was military, stepfather was military, brother went into the military, stepbrother went into the military. My sister was the one who didn't want to do it. You always got the one. And I wanted to go in to the military. I chose the Marine Corps because, you know, I wanted to be hardcore. I thought nobody else did it. So I wanted to do Marine Corps because I don't want to be like the rest of y'all. I want to be the tough one. I didn't know he did it, though. So, you know, too late. I already signed up. So I go into the Marine Corps, right, and I got hurt my first day. Yeah, it's funny. Let it out. And so let's just say my Marine Corps time was 29 days. Very short, but, you know, we'll get back to that. So 29 days in, and I came home, right? And, of course, I felt like some crap because I was in a ready enlistment program my senior year of high school, so that was my game plan, was to go in. And I went in 2005, right, so the war was going on. And I knew what I wanted to do, and I went through that program, and I trained hard, and I was the fastest chick, second fastest person in that program. And I was the fastest girl in that program. And I knew my freaking Marine Corps history and everything. And I went in there, and they had every expectation for me to come out, what's it called, a squad leader? Squad leader. Every expectation of that. And I got hurt the first day. So I was disappointed in myself. I was upset. You know what I mean? This is not what my life was supposed to be. I was supposed to go into the military. I was supposed to go to college with that because I didn't want to go. It just, that wasn't my first game plan. And so I was angry. You know, this wasn't what I wanted. So when I came home, I immediately put myself into some kind of like vocational school because I felt like I needed to do something with myself. And I didn't move in with my mom. I moved in with my sister. That was my choice. Go figure. Just so I could feel like I was doing something better with myself. And over time, you know, I did that for a little while. I finished the program. I was doing medical assistant. I also got into another program, CNA, because I heard I could get paid to do that. But then I got a little blown because it turned out you didn't get paid till the end of the program. So I was doing two programs you didn't get paid for. And when I finished both programs, which I did complete because I'm really good with medical stuff, I wound up getting a job that had nothing to do with neither of the two. I made good money with those jobs, real good money, to the point where I was able to get my own place. You know what I mean? I was psyched, too, because most of my friends were in college, so they still lived at home with their parents, you know what I mean? And so I was the party house because I had my own spot, and I was making good money, you know, so I was feeling good. And so, you know, we used to party, pregame at my house, let's go party at the club, come back to my house, the whole nine yards, so my drinking got even heavier, and I'm a binge drinker, so it was real, you know what I mean? And then I guess I had too much fun with this awesome apartment of mine because 8 months later I wound up pregnant. Yeah, I was that person. So now I'm pregnant. But I was like, okay, I'm a grown woman. I made the decision to get pregnant. It's going to be all right, right? I'll be okay. So I went forward with that process, you know, and it was okay. Pregnancy was all right. I think I was about 8 months pregnant at the time. And I remember I was calling my mom when I was coming home from this really good job that I was telling y'all about. And I was so excited because I had some great news to tell her. And she answered the phone. Oh, by the way, she did home daycare, so my mom got tired a lot after work. And I remember I called her up after she got done with her daycare, and I'm like, hey, mom, I'm excited. I'm the baby, too, by the way, you guys. I was the last one out the house. So she started going to the gym at this point in time. So when I called her, she's like, oh, I'm sorry, Marvin, I'm about to go to the gym, but talk to me when I get back. So I said, okay. So I went to the house like most pregnant people at 8 months, and I went to sleep. And then I woke up, and I realized my mom didn't call me an hour later. So I called her. She didn't answer the phone. I called the house. Nobody answered the phone. I called my stepfather. Nobody answered. And my sister and my niece came to the door. They knocked at my door. Go figure. And they told me that my mom was in the hospital. She had a cardiac arrest. It was really tough to find that out. They had my mom in the hospital for about 5 to 6 days. She was at the gym working out, you know, and her heart just stopped. And so they told us that she was brain dead. And we had to take off the ventilator, And this was really hard for me because my mom was like my ace boon cool. We was close as can be. This was the woman that when I got my first DUI at 17 years old, but later they changed it to reckless because I had a really good lawyer. You know what I mean? The woman that freaking took me to all my college classes, because when I did that corporate job, I started doing college classes while I was pregnant with this child, right? And so she took me around and all that good stuff. And I told her everything. And it was just crazy that now she's going to be gone. So February the 6th, 2008, I turned 21 years old. February the 7th, 2008, we took my mom off the ventilator. And February the 12th, 2008, I had my kid. When this child was born, something about her just didn't look right. I couldn't really put my hands on it. I wasn't really sure what it was. I just know she looked different than what a regular kid looked like. After I had my child, and I guess it takes about like an hour or two or whatever for them to clean them up and bring them back to you. They want you to try to breastfeed and all that good stuff. Sorry to give you the visual. But they had me try to do that, and so we were working on that. And I noticed that she wasn't really attaching right, and my child stopped breathing in my arms. So I yelled for somebody to come and help, and they did CPR on her, and they rushed her to another hospital. They were able to get her on, you know, together, and they rushed her to another hospital, and I had to go along to another hospital. And it was at that hospital they were to tell me what my daughter had. She had what's called Apert syndrome. And just real quick about that, real brief, my daughter has a syndrome that deals with fusion. So like her fingers were fused together, the toes were fused together, the soft spot in her skull, like how your brain's supposed to grow, that skull was already fused together. That's not supposed to be fused until you're an adult. So they had to manually do all these different surgeries to my child. So I sat there and I listened to them tell me all the stuff that they had to do, not knowing that while I'm going through all this, I'm just getting number and number. And when I left from that hospital, after they told me everything and she was good for being there for a few weeks, and I left from that hospital diagnosed with postpartum. And that family that I was so close to, that family, that stepbrothers and stepsister and all that, even though they got on my nerves, we were still an awesome family unit. Like, because we went to church all the time and everybody wanted to be like us. And my mom was the glue that held us together. But since she was gone, we all kind of just went our separate ways. So I went home without the mother and I went home without that family. Right. And because I kind of had some issues with my dad, I went home without really trying to talk to him. So I was hurt by myself, feeling all these different feelings and not understanding why I couldn't emotionally attach to this child. I struggled with that. And that stepfather who helped raise me since I was 4 years old, you know, he kind of like started slipping away. Like I could tell he was depressed too because he loved my mother, but he started kind of stepping back a little bit. So I started feeling feelings of abandonment. And I struggled with that. And even the church people at the church, it's like they picked his side even though I didn't even know we were fighting. So now that religion that I grew up with started to separate too. I struggle with that. This is God? I don't want nothing to do with it. Right? So now I'm a single mom, right? Because the father who I grew up with since I was like 5 years old, you know what I mean, struggled with the fact that this child looked different, so he didn't want nothing to do with her. And I struggle with that. And now I'm a single mom with this child by myself. No mother to guide me through the process. The older sister kind of went her separate way because she struggled harder with that too. And the whole family's gone and I'm trying to figure out what happens next. So again, my mom did home daycare. So I had to let, like, you know, stuff just started happening. You know, I guess God at the time, you know, when I wasn't able to help myself, put some stuff in my brain and let me know what I was supposed to do. So I established daycare. We got that squared away. And I still had the corporate job. So I did the corporate job. And I made sure that I picked her up from daycare and I brought her home and I cleaned her up and made sure she was good, put her to bed. And when she went to bed, I made my dinner, I had a glass of wine, and that glass of wine turned to two, turned to three, turned to a bottle, turned to some liquor because the wine wasn't strong enough anymore, to the point that I need that till I was completely dependent on going to sleep with that. That was my life on a regular basis for a long time, you know? I remember it got to the point where I was finally able to get a nurse because my daughter needed to get a trach over a period of time. I didn't know she had sleep apnea. I didn't know you were supposed to check on your child in the middle of the night, so I heard somebody share it. So I started checking on her in the middle of the night, and I noticed she stopped breathing that night. And I happened to mention that right before she had surgery. And they told me that we need to do a sleep study. I found out she had sleep apnea. So bad that she needed a tracheotomy. That's if you have a hole in your throat, so you could breathe from the hole in your throat. So now she has nurses at the home, and I'm like, awesome, right? Because my, I got postpartum, which now turned to depression because I had it too long at this point in time, right? And so at this point, I'm like, awesome, I got nurses now, damn near 24 hours worth of nurses, so I get to be free, right? Because if you a single mom, you know what I'm talking about? I was trapped in the house all the time, so now I get to get out every once in a while. And so I have to share this because this is just so big on my heart about how serious this disease is. I remember I got to a point where I used to go out and party all the time every Wednesday night. And I remember on a Wednesday night, I would stay out till the whole night. Sometimes wouldn't even come home right away. I knew I had to be home at a certain time to relieve the nurse, but I would go out. And this particular time, I didn't stay out all night. Something in my heart told me that I had to go home. I wasn't sure what it was because I was having fun, but something said go home. So I went home. And I couldn't make it to my room, so I passed out on the couch, you know what I mean? And I heard this alarm go off. It's like for the pulse ox machine and say how much the oxygen is going on. The nurse is still there. And I heard the alarm go off, and I was like, okay, because it usually goes off around this hour because the nurse is kind of messing with my daughter, like getting her together and stuff for the morning because usually she gets her set, so all I got to do is get up and just, you know, work with her, do whatever we do. And I didn't think nothing of it. And over time, it was annoying me, right? Because I don't like noise when I sleep. I don't know about y'all. But it was annoying me because I'm like, dang, this ain't been going on for a minute. And next thing I know, I hear the nurse yelling, Marvy, Marvy, come quick. And she knocks on my bedroom door because normal people sleep in their rooms. You know what I mean? But I drank, so I couldn't. And she was yelling for me to come quick, come quick. So I get up because I'm still a little hungover to see what she wants. And she's carrying this blue body in her hand. And I looked at this child, and it was my kid, and she was lifeless. And I yelled, what did you do to my kid? And I took her, and I put her down, and I looked at her. And again, something came into me, right? Because all those damn classes that they kept making me take, the CPR, and I told you I did that medical assistant crap and that CNA stuff. Who knew that stuff was supposed to work for something, right? Came back to me, and I instantly did CPR on my kid. Because that nurse froze. But as soon as she saw me doing CPR, she started stepping up too. And we called 911, and we worked together, and that kid got resuscitated before the doctors and the paramedics even got there. And we took her to the emergency room. Well, they medevaced her out to Children's in D.C., and I was just so thankful, and I was so hurt and stuck. And you would have thought I would have wanted to get clean there, but instead, after I knew she was getting in the hospital, I went right back out and partied and drank some more. Because that's how jacked up this disease is. Over time, in 2009, I got laid off from my job. Right? Because that's when everybody was losing jobs. And I got laid off from this job. And it was tough. But I kind of saw it coming for me anyway because I was going through depression like crazy. I had freaking anxiety and so forth, and I was just breaking down, you know. So I knew when they was grouping up everybody, I was going to be there. You know what I'm saying? And so I got pulled away from the job, and I had to find some work, and I wound up making the decision to start dancing. And that's what I decided to do. And in that dancing, I found myself, you know, in that world, I got caught up with more things, you know. First, it was really just drinking for me. And then I started other types of drugs and stuff like that, you know, to cope, to stay awake. I rationalized, justified everything. I was doing a little bit of E-pills to stay awake. I sorted some coke with customers because now I started tricking and shit. And it just all made sense. And I rationalized and justified that. It gave me more money and so forth, right? And so that was the life I lived for a long time. But let me zoom it fast because I'm running out of time, right? So I was doing that for a while. And I found myself in a place where I was just feeling hopeless and angry, and I wanted to die, and life sucked, and so much was just really going on, and I was just tired. I felt I was suicidal, pretty much. I wanted to die. And mind you, I was going to therapy too, y'all. They put me on antidepressants, but I was still drinking, so that shit really wasn't helping. I was making myself crazier, you know what I mean? And I couldn't understand. I was still going to the therapy, and they kept telling me to stop, and I just knew better than them, and I was still going through this ongoing back and forth struggle. And long story short, it took another DUI to wake me the heck up. Because I was just like that lady who shared earlier, you know what I mean? I started catching, like, charges, you know, and stuff like that. I mean, I'm not hardcore, nothing like that, but I was getting dumb stuff, you know, disorderly conduct, because I don't know how to act when I drink, and I have emotions and crap like that, and I start fights and arguing and all. That's what I do. I have fun, right? Because that's what I would call until I got in jail, you know? So I'm in jail for the umpteenth time from that last DUI I was telling you about. And here's the kicker, y'all. This is the kicker part right here. I drank and partied, went to the car, and decided not to drive. I went to sleep. But it was St. Patrick's Day. It was cold outside, so I turned on the heat. Right? But how do you turn on the heat in your car? You put the key in the ignition, and you turn on your car. Then I turned it off. I went to sleep, and the cop got me because the key was in the ignition, intent to drive, DUI. So don't do it. don't drink. You know what I mean? And I just remember that time sitting in that jail cell, and I made this prayer that I always make this prayer, every time. But this one time, I actually really meant what I said. And I said, God, if you help me this time, I promise I'll do something different. Because I was tired of not being the best mom for my child, because I forgot to share this part with you, but the lady who was taking care of my daughter as daycare actually took her in for 3 years for me because I was struggling a lot, and she was like, let me take care of her until you get back on your feet. So I was tired of not really being there for my kid. I was tired of not having that emotional attachment with her because I really didn't understand, you know, what a real parent's supposed to be, because I thought she was going to die, therefore I didn't want to get emotionally connected to you. But there's one thing that I did the whole time that I didn't really share about in this meeting. Even though I hated God and I hated that church that I was at for all different many reasons and so forth, I still made a prayer for her. I didn't pray for me. Screw me. Prayed for her because of all the surgeries. My child's had 29 surgeries and she's 9 years old. I still prayed for her, even though I would be drunk or high or whatever my situation. I still prayed for her. I said, God, regardless of the crap that I'm doing, just take care of that kid. I already planned on not being here. I already planned on dying eventually because I didn't see my life worth living. But that child didn't deserve any of that. And I knew that at least. So eventually I took myself to that VA hospital, right? I told you I was going to get back to that. That 29 days made a difference, you know what I mean? Because I was a disabled vet. I told you I got hurt. So I collect my little check. Don't tell me I got heels on. That's true. I am hurt. But I'm just enjoying my heels while I can. But yeah, I went up to that VA hospital. I saw the psychologist there because I knew something was wrong. You know what I mean? I knew I needed some help. I still didn't believe I had a drug problem, but I knew something was wrong, right? And anyways, I went up there and I got help, you know, and I let me run back real quick because I missed the part. When I did make that prayer in that jail cell, I did get out because that lady who took care of my child bailed me out. You get what I'm saying? I, at this point in time, was living with my dad and my stepmother. And when I came home, I spoke to them, or really they spoke to me. I felt like they knew I was getting out, like somebody called them and told them, because they were just sitting at the table waiting. And I remember my stepmom was the one who started the conversation and said, Marvie, we know you've been through a lot. We know you've been going through a lot, but we want to help you if you let us help you because you've been putting up this wall. And I asked my dad if there's anything I could do to change myself. He said, well, first stop drinking. And then could you go to a meeting? See, I've been to meetings, like he said, drawing pictures and everything. I remember that. But I never went for myself. So I went to a meeting with him. And then I left with no expectations to come back. But I didn't use. And I still felt crappy on the inside, and I still wanted to die, and I didn't understand. Because I'm like, well, damn, God, like, I stopped drinking and stuff. What's the problem? I ain't even doing no drugs, nothing. I'm chilling. And that's when I went to that psychologist. And that's when they put me in an outpatient program at the VA. Go freaking figure. And that's where I continued to stay clean. And then when I got done with that program, they freaking got me housing, right? So I was able to move out of their house. They was happy. And I was able to get put back into school, right? Because I told y'all when I was pregnant with my daughter, I went into school, but I stopped because of all her medical issues. 29 surgeries at a game, like that's a lot of stuff going on. You know what I mean? And so I stopped, but they put me back into school, so I got back into school. But you don't start that right away. So I'm in this brand new apartment, no furniture, no nothing. I got set up to go to school, but I don't start yet. And I was still feeling like I wanted to die. Life sucks. Everything's horrible because I'm out of this program now. So I don't have no type of structure anymore. So I don't know what to do with myself. And I called this lady in this blue phone book that I got from that first meeting. I went with my dad. And it was a lady with the real cool hair. Because I didn't remember her name, and that's all I remember. And I still say to this day, she still laughs, and she's still laughing right now. So I called the lady with the real cool hair, and today, some really fly glasses. And I feel for her, because I threw up all over her as far as, like, conversation, right? And I was just like, man, and I gave her all this stuff, right? And I was talking as fast as I was just talking a couple seconds ago. And when I finished talking, she said, well, first off, congratulations. Right, because that's all I wanted to hear because I graduated from that program. And called me every day. I called her every day. And let me move up faster because it gave me 5 minutes earlier. And they said, call me every day. And so I called her every day. And she invited me to meetings. And I went to more meetings with my dad. And I found myself going to meetings by myself. And I found myself finding a home group. And I found myself getting into service. And then she told me I needed a sponsor. So I said, can I sponsor you since I call you every day? She said, yes. And then she told me I had to do step work. And I was like, well, dang, I just did all this other stuff. I got to do that. She said, yes, to be an sponsee family, that's what you got to do. So I did. I still got to work at 8. I know. It's a work in progress. But I say all that to say is that I've gained a spiritual connection being here in these rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. The woman who took care of my daughter for 3 years and was a daycare provider moved into my apartment that I had and helped me and my daughter reconnect with one another. That emotional attachment that I have with her, detachment that I have with her, is getting better. It's not the greatest, but it's a lot better. I actually want to be around my daughter. She actually calls me mom. She actually says, I love you. I actually say it back. I actually think about her sometimes and want to call her and want to spend time with her. I don't always want to, but y'all are teaching me how to. I don't always want to stay in the hospital when she has to go, but y'all taught me ways to do it. Somebody from Philadelphia actually gave me puzzles to do puzzles with her, because I liked puzzles. So she said she might too. And she mailed me puzzles. She asked for my address and actually mailed me puzzles. This is what y'all do in this program. My kid loves me. And she helped me and my father even have a stronger relationship, because even though I struggle with the relationship me and him have, he has a great one with her. So I just thank all of you guys for being here. Rather, I know you or not, it's just having the faces here that just does something for me and for my life. So again, I just thank you all for being here. Thank you, Dad, for letting me go second. And I got to thank my sponsor, Kim, as well. Because rather she knew it or not, they said pick somebody you want to be like, somebody that you admire. And at the same time, I had to pick her because she was like a mother figure for me, too. And I think she knows that by now. But I thank you so much. You mean so much to me. You have no idea. Thank you guys for letting me share.